It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 166 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And I'm sure everyone had a fun weekend of X-Wing last week. The Campaign Against Cancer charity events were happening all over the country. It's a great thing to participate in. It was just a real blast and just a fun community event for a good cause. So shout out to everyone who organized or contributed to that throughout the country. Always awesome.
But the X-Wing excitement didn't end there. We got another preview article for an upcoming Wave 4 ship, this time Fantasy Flight, spoiling some new cards from the Naboo Royal N1 Starfighter expansion, which is going to be coming as part of Wave 4, which is really close. All these ships are going to be arriving at your game store on June 6th.
Yeah, and Tim, your favorite movie character's in there, so you know, let's keep that a surprise for when we get there, but lot to talk about, of course.
Carson, I feel like it wasn't that long ago that we got an X-Wing release. The Republic and the Separatist stuff came out, a couple days ago, it feels like?
Yeah, you know, I feel like I'm starting to get a pretty good grasp of what those factions are all about, and now we get some new toys out of that, so we get to relearn all over again.
Yeah, that Wave 3 content came out in the middle of March, and just like not even 3 months later, we're getting all this Wave 4 content here, which is going to be bringing three brand new ships to the game of X-Wing: the Naboo Royal N1 Starfighter, the Hyena-class Droid Bomber, and the Resistance Transport expansion, along with several reprints of existing ships that appeared in X-Wing First Edition, including a TIE Silencer reprint, which has also a new sculpt, so it's smaller and is more accurate to the actual size of the ship. A Rebel Millennium Falcon reprint, a B-Wing reprint with more articulated parts so that B-Wing can pivot and swing all different directions, a VT-49 Decimator reprint, and a TIE SF reprint, along with that eagerly anticipated deluxe movement tools and range ruler set.
I mean, yeah, I'm going to get quite a few copies of those maneuver templates. That's what I'm saving up for. I mean, but of course, for me, the main exciting points are those new ships. We got the N1, the Hyena class, and that Resistance transport. Should be a lot of fun. And it looks like they're bringing a lot of new mechanics to the game. And finally, some new generic upgrades. So something for every player there.
Yeah, this week we're going to look at the N1 Starfighter and the Hyena-class Droid Bomber. We've got enough spoiled content here. There's actually a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Like you said, not just for the ships themselves, but also some generic upgrades that'll see play in all the factions. Let's start by looking at the Hyena-class Droid Bomber, though.
Yeah, I mean, so this is sort of a beefier Vulture droid. I guess hyenas are stronger than vultures. Both just scavengers, though. So we have two attack dice, 2 agility, and then 5 hit points. No shields. So similar to the Vultures there, but with 2 more hit points. And then it's got the calculated action, of course, because it's a droid. The target lock action, barrel roll, which you can link into a red lock, and then a red reload action.
We also have a very funky-looking maneuver dial, much like the Vulture-class droid fighter, where you just see a wide range of different colors in different places. The droids tend to struggle with those more subtle bank maneuvers, so we'll see in cases like it's got one straight and one white turns, as well as red, one banks. And then over on the two front, 2 straight blue, 2 hard turn blues, and then 2 white banks. You've got some red 2 talon rolls, a red 2 K-turn, and then a 3 blue straight, 3 white hard turns, 4 white straight, and a 5 red straight.
It's pretty nice that it's got a comparable dial to the Vulture, so that you can fly these in formation pretty well. You know, having those blue turns on both those ships really helps, especially when you're doing those linked actions. This one seems a little bit slower than the Vulture, but it's nice that you can generally fly them in formation pretty well.
Yeah, and that seems important too, because the Hyena class bombers come with the same ship ability that the Vulture classes did, the network calculation ship ability, where while you defend or perform an attack, you may spend one calculate token from a friendly ship at range 0 to 1 to change one focus result to an evade or hit result. So these guys will work in tandem together really well, and having complementary dials where you can, you know, fly them in formation if you need to really helps with that. Fantasy Flight was also kind enough to what looks like spoil most of, if not all of the pilots here. We see some generics, an I-1 generic and an I-3 generic, as well as some limited ship types, much akin to what we see with the Vulture class, where they have, you know, a limited to 2, a limited to 3, and a couple limited to 1s.
Yeah, once again, we see a general trend of lower initiative comparable to the Vulture. So these guys are maxing out at initiative 4. And then a lot of options at the lower initiatives. You know, you got the Bactoid prototypes that are limited 2 with a pretty nice ability to still get those munitions off even at a lower initiative. While you perform a special attack, if a friendly ship with the networked calculations ship ability has a lock on the defender, you may ignore the focus calculator lock requirements of that attack. So if your little Vulture's got a target lock on, you know, Anakin, because he always ends up in terrible spots, then these Bactoid prototypes can still fire their munitions, even if they didn't get a lock on Anakin. They can fire their plasma torpedoes, proton torpedoes, energy cell charges, kind of whatever.
And complementing that, we have over at Initiative 3, the Bombardment Drone, which is limited to just 3 copies, and it has the pilot ability. If you would drop a device, you may launch that device instead using the same template.
It is pretty cool with the Bombardment Drone, too, that you can do, you know, launch your proximity mine one straight, and then they have those white one turns that you can narrowly avoid that.
So whether you want to go the ordnance route or the bomb route, you've got some great options here at the lower initiatives. But there's actually some really cool stuff up at the higher initiative, limited to just 1 Hyena class.
Yeah, and then up at the top end, you got some interesting normal limited ships. So you can only have 1 of these guys. You got DB-32C, which is the Hyena that I'm the most interested in, because instead of that reload action, you've got a red jam action. And then a pretty neat pilot ability. At the start of the engagement phase, you can spend a calculate token to perform a coordinate action. And you can't coordinate to ships that don't have network calculations. So this guy's a really good support slash control platform.
Yeah, this one definitely serving a dual function here. Obviously, you're not going to probably load it out with much ordnance, if any, because you don't have that awesome reload action. But being able to coordinate to other ships with network calculations really lets this one boost your swarms. Even if you're flying a bunch of just the weaker Vulture classes, this one's going to be a great support platform so that they can get some really modified attacks. And it actually will have probably surprising survivability thanks to that network calculations ship ability, being able to get modification from other friendly ships on defense. I think really one of the more interesting elements, though, of 32C is not so much the ship itself. It's the fact that they opted to give him a different selection of actions, or at least that one different action than all the other variants of this ship.
Oh, yeah. Super neat. And I think that really is a pretty bold design choice. And one I'd be curious to see if we see more of that in the future.
Yeah, because it seems like up to this point, anytime different copies of the same ship needed to have like different action arrangements or different loadouts, there would be, you know, configuration cards to do that. We've seen that with like the Fire Spray or with the Alpha Class Starwing. So I think it's interesting to see just specific pilots actually have actions linked to them, more so than just the difference between a focus and a calculate, which we see on human and droid pilots. So I'm wondering if we're going to see more of that in the future, if this is one of those other new game design elements that they've kind of learned after the launch of second edition when that development was finished, so that maybe we'll start to see things like this crop up more in the future.
I certainly hope so. I think it's pretty interesting. We also have, you know, the ace of the Hyenas coming in at initiative 4, DBS 404.
That's a lot of fours, so that's easy to remember.
That's right.
This one's got a pretty funky pilot ability. You can perform primary attacks while at range 0. While you perform an attack at range 0 to 1, you must roll one additional die. after the attack hits, suffer one critical damage.
Seems fair.
Yeah, this guy's really aggressive and a little reckless.
Yeah, you know, just like a vulture, these things are going to blow up anyway. You might as well deal some damage first.
Now, one thing that's cool about this ship is that while it can perform attacks at range zero, it doesn't grant your opponent the ability to attack at range zero, which is different than like the Zebarelius crew card. So you can throw it into places where it not only gets a block, it still gets to perform an attack. I also like that it only has to suffer the critical damage, which is a pretty devastating cost if it hits with its attacks. So you don't have to risk anything by shooting and missing and still suffering damage.
All right, now with these hyenas, we also have some pretty cool generic upgrade cards. One that a lot of people are excited to have returned to the game is Plasma Torpedoes. It's a 3 attack dice torpedo with the lock requirement. It's got 2 charges, and you spend 1 charge to use. During the neutralized result step, critical results are going to be canceled before hit results. So after this attack hits, the defender loses 1 shield.
Yeah, so I'm actually excited to see this ordnance enter the game. We saw the recasting of proton torpedoes bring them up to 12 points, so they're pretty expensive now, so you really have to be dedicated to using them if you're going to include them in a list. I very much expect plasma torpedoes to be a little bit less expensive than that since they're limited to just 3 attack dice, though they do have the potential to net you 4 total damage if they're able to remove a shield from your opponent.
You know, these have always sort of been the budget torpedo, but they have a similar damage potential to a proton torpedo. I mean, yes, there's not a critical thing in there that the proton torpedoes add, but you know, if you're canceling that shield first and then dealing some hits, you can get 4 damage as well pretty consistently.
Yeah, and that actually is one big difference between the first edition version and the second edition version, where in the first edition, the shield would be removed after you dealt damage from the torpedo, but thanks to the timing of X-Wing 2nd Edition, you'll actually remove the shield before you deal the damage. So you remove the shield at the end of the neutralize result step, and then you deal the damage in the following step. Another upgrade that we're seeing that is not just limited to any particular faction here is the delayed fuses modification, which after you drop, launch, or place a bomb or mine, you may place 1 fuse marker on that device. A fuse token gets removed from a device when it would detonate. If it's got a fuse token, you just remove one of those instead, and it remains on the board, presumably to detonate the following turn.
Yeah, so kind of a neat new bomb gimmick. We have landing struts, which are the same long amount of text as grappling struts that the vultures have, but these work for the hyenas. And then there's the electron proton bomb, which is a crazy upgrade card. It costs a bomb slot, a mod slot, and you need to be able to reload, but you can't reload it.
Yep, so this one's bonkers. It's limited, the electro-proton bomb. During the system phase, you may spend 1 charge to drop the electro-proton bomb with the 1 straight template. Then place 1 fuse marker on the device. This card's charges can't be recovered, so you have to have reload, but you can't reload this particular one. What's crazy, though, is how this bomb detonates, because it's the biggest bomb we've seen in the game to date. When one of the electro proton bomb detonate, each ship at range 0 to 2 rolls 4 attack dice, losing a shield for each blank, gaining an ion token for each focus or damage, and then taking 1 disarm token for each critical damage.
Yeah, and so there's a lot to process in there. You know, the first part is range 0 to 2, massive radius. We've never had a bomb be that large. I mean, just think about when you're placing obstacles and you're using that range 2 ruler. That's a huge area. So even though this is going to be delayed for a turn because it is going to have one of those fuse markers on it, that's a pretty big area to try and escape, even if you do have a turn.
Well, and it seems like a device that actually negatively impacts large base or medium base ships more than the small base ships, because those ships tend to have more hit points and therefore more shields. And really, the only way this bomb actually does like conventional damage is through removing shields. So if you're a smaller ship, you're actually probably more likely to, you know, be limber, be quick enough to get away and dodge it within that extra turn. Whereas those larger ships might have a harder time getting outside of range 2. They could lose a bunch of shields.
Well, right. And like the Separatists are particularly positioned to take advantage of this bomb because the Hyena and the Vultures have no shields. So they're not as great a risk as other ships going into this area. Now, those disarm tokens are still going to be pretty brutal. And you can't calculate after you take an ion maneuver, so that's not good. But not having to risk losing a shield is a pretty good benefit there.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that this card will see a lot of competitive play. It's just, I think it's a little more thematic and a little less focused on the competitive side. It just seems kind of clunky to pull off effectively. Because I think, you know, it wouldn't be hard if you're aware of this bomb's existence to, you know, plan for that and not put all your ships in a position where they're all going to get impacted by it at the same time.
I think the part about Electro Proton Bomb that I'm the most excited about is it's kind of a card like Heroic, where when you use it, you have to announce it to the whole room. It's just sort of some extra text that you can't quite see written on the card. But with a name like Electro Proton Bomb, I think that's just something that needs to be yelled out quite a bit. And I'm excited about that. We also have Diamond Boron Missiles, which are another really text-heavy missile that basically you can spend some charges to do some splash damage.
Maybe. Yeah, this one kind of bums me out. I don't even want to read the text here. It's just a, you know, 3-charge, 3-attack dice missile at range 2-3. It takes 2 missile slots, so that's going to limit the number of ships it can go on. I'm just kind of bummed out because the text is kind of clunky, and I'm tired of seeing all these really text-heavy cards in X-Wing. I just don't think that's necessary right now, especially since we're really just in the early life of second edition. I don't think we need this level of, you know, text complexity out there.
The game's already complex enough.
We also have a new tactical relay, obviously separatist only in solitary, TA-175. After a friendly ship at range 0-3 with the calculate action on its action bar is destroyed, each friendly ship at range 0-3 with the calculate action on its action bar gains 1 calculate token. I actually kind of like this one for those calculating swarms of vultures and hyenas.
Yeah, this is actually pretty solid, especially when you're using a lot of vultures, because those guys die pretty quickly.
Well, and since they typically have such low initiative anyway, if they haven't already attacked for the round when one of them gets destroyed, which seems pretty likely, that can actually put a pretty big threat on your opponent, where you can throw these guys in some funny situations, do some K-turns if you know one of them's going to die, and then he just feeds everyone else calculate tokens so they're ready to attack and follow up when that ship dies. Seems solid.
Yeah, so quite a lot packed into this Hyena expansion.
Yeah, and I think as we see more and more ships within this faction release that have that network calculation ship ability, it's just going to make those swarms more and more compelling. So the Separatists are all well and good, but I'm really into the Republic faction right now, so I'm super excited for the N1 Starfighter to come out here very soon.
You're all about that sleek, shiny design?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, this movie came out when I was a kid. I loved it so much, still do. And it's got some really iconic Star Wars ships in there. And the N1 Starfighter is just awesome, design-wise. And it's actually looking pretty fun to play in X-Wing.
Yeah, and I thought the design of this ship mechanically was a little surprising, but I'm actually pretty happy with the result. You know, you have a semi-nimble Starfighter here. At least that's how it's presented in the films. But it's kind of presented a bit more like a generic starfighter than super nimble, but with a ship ability that then really boosts its survivability.
Yeah, so, and we've already talked a little bit about the N1, but it's got, you know, 2 attack dice, 2 agility, 3 hull, and 2 shields. So pretty standard stat line there, not huge on the attack, and it's got a focused lock, barrel roll, and boost action, as well as that really cool full throttle ability that we see on the TIE Defender, where after you fully execute a speed 3-5 maneuver, you may perform an evade action.
Yeah, and so when we're talking about full throttle, we really have to process, okay, what does this ship's dial look like? You know, it's got a pretty good amount of 1 and 2 speed maneuvers, but with full throttle, we don't really care about those. We want to be doing those fast maneuvers every turn. And the N1 has pretty good fast maneuvers. It's got all of the normal 3-speed maneuvers. It's 3 straights and 3 banks are blue, so that's good. And then it's got white 3 turns, and then a 4 and 5 straight that are white, as well as 3 talent rolls that are red. So a decent selection of 3-speed and higher maneuvers.
And obviously, it can't perform the evade action after it does the three talons without the aid of some, you know, key upgrade cards. But having the full range of standard three-speed maneuvers as well as a four and five straight gives it a lot of great options for full throttle. Maybe not quite as good as the TIE Defender with its four white K-turn, but it's going to be probably substantially less expensive than that. So, you know, it's a way to compensate.
Right, and it does have that lower agility so that evade token's not going to be as valuable as it is on a three agility ship. But I really like the combination of two agility plus a free evade token. I think that makes the N1 a pretty interesting option.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it falls between a normal two and a normal three agility ship.
Right, it's kind of going to have a really consistent, predictable survivability, pretty comparable to like a B-Wing, where you kind of know exactly how long that thing's going to last.
Yeah, I mean, with five hit points, I think this thing is going to do a little bit better than I expected. When, you know, looking at the design, I always would have thought it would have been, you know, closer to the A-Wing four hit points. But it's reasonably bulky for what you're getting, assuming it's got a pretty good price value, which I would hope would start somewhere in the mid-30s. I could see this ship getting a lot of table play. It does have some cool name pilots, though, for sure. And probably absolutely one of the greatest Star Wars characters of all time. And I'm not talking about Anakin.
Of course not. Yeah, I mean, and one other thing that the N1 does have going for it is I think that two agility is like pretty surprisingly strong here in second edition. I've been really impressed with the survivability of a lot of two agility ships so far. So adding a free evade token on top of that, even though it does have, you know, some lower hit points, I think it'll still be pretty survivable. I mean, look at the TIE Phantoms. You know, they get a free evade with five hit points and they're really resilient.
But let's look at some of these pilots, though, especially the, you know, probably one of the greatest Star Wars characters of all time. Can we talk about him now, Carson? I'm so excited.
Sure. You know, this is someone I didn't really know existed until today when you started talking to me about him. But I'm really excited for you, Tim.
I mean, he delivers one of the my favorite Star Wars lines. You all know it. The power's back. That little droid did it. Rick O'Lee at Initiative 5 in the N1 Starfighter. Bravo leader himself.
And this actually looks like a, you know, pretty cool ship. So maybe I'll have to get to know Rick a little better.
Yeah, Rick's ability, which makes it, it's awesome because he's awesome. So while you defend or perform a primary attack, if the speed of your revealed maneuver is higher than the enemy ships, roll one additional die.
Well, rolling more dice is great. I'm already on board at that point. And initiative 5, that's pretty darn good. You know, these N1s have the boost and barrel roll actions, so they can really leverage that, a higher initiative. And you want to go fast here with that full throttle. So that works really well.
Well, and one thing I really like about this ability is I think it puts Rick actually in a pretty good position for the game. He's kind of, to me, hopefully in the same area as like Lulu Lampar, where like the actual value you can get out of him if you fly him right is a lot more than the points you're paying for him. So if he falls somewhere, you know, anywhere close to where Lulu is cost wise, right around 40 points, being able to get three attack dice or have the three agility dice along with a, you know, focus and evade token, that's really strong.
Right. If he can come in at a low 40 points with maybe some upgrades, that'll enable you to take two pretty heavily loaded Jedi starfighters. So then you can have a pretty good three ace list.
And that would kind of be like the Republic variant of the Danger Zone you're flying, right? With Lulo Po and Nian.
Yeah, we'd have to come up with a new name, but of course.
We also have some other cool pilots, though. Anakin, Padme were both demonstrated on FFG's live stream. Anakin's initiative 4 and has a force rating of 1. With the ability, before you reveal your maneuver, you may spend 1 force charge to barrel roll. This is not an action. So basically what that means is before you move, you can barrel roll, and then later after you move, you can barrel roll again.
I'm upset Anakin only, even baby Anakin only has 1 force charge. He's got so many midichlorians, Tim.
this is a cool ability, though. Actually, just having the 1 force charge is pretty good. Because that gives you some opportunities there. If you want to, you know, double mod an ordnance shot on one turn, be able to take the lock and still get mods later. That's really cool. Being able to barrel roll before you move is actually really awesome. I mean, double barrel rolling is cool too, but just having that maneuver option before you move opens up your dial so much and prevents you from getting blocked or enables you to do some really cool blocks.
I think Anakin will be really fun to fly. I'm gonna barrel roll one way, slide backwards, and then barrel roll back the same direction, slide backwards, just slowly inch my way backwards.
Yeah, Anakin's pretty cool, but actually I think Padme, beyond, you know, besides Rick Oley, obviously he's the greatest pilot here, possibly in the whole Star Wars universe, but Padme, I think, gives him a run for his money in the Naboo Starfighter. She's got a really cool ability.
Yeah, I think Padme's the most exciting pilot for me here. Because, of course, now we have a control pilot here for the Republic. Padme's an I-4 pilot that has the ability, while an enemy ship in your forward firing arc defends or performs an attack, that ship can modify only one focus result.
Yeah, so this is an interesting ability. It pairs really well with the Juke talent card, where you can, you know, when you attack, if you have an evade token, which you're likely to, thanks to the full throttle ability, you can change one of your opponent's evade results into a focus result. So Padme can then force them to only be able to modify one focus result. So let's say you're shooting at someone, you've got an evade, you have Juke, they roll an evade and a focus, and they have a focus token. You can change their evade into a focus, and they can only spend that focus token to modify one result. So you're actually expanding the ability of Juke, where in that situation, normally, they'd just be able to convert them both back to evades with the focus token, and your Juke wouldn't have done much for you.
Well, and I also just like that Padme is going to boost your squad's defense as well. You know, when your opponent can only modify one of their focus results attacking any of your ships, as long as they're in Padme's firing arc, you know, they're just not going to be able to get to their full potential on their attacks as often. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, I'm really liking these N1s too, because I really feel like they're going to help fill out the Republic faction there, because there's some really cool stuff, and I think you can already build some cool lists. The VT-19 I really don't think is the great filler ship right now, so I'm excited to see if these N1s will fill in that kind of filler ship slot, where you don't want to quite invest all the points into an Ark or all the points into a Jedi, but you want something kind of mid-range that can still do damage and survive.
Right, I think if they hit that midpoint between a Torrent and an Ark, I think they'll be in a pretty good spot.
We've seen some other pilots for the N1 pop up tier 2. Denis Elberger, she has the ability where while you defend or perform an attack, if the speed of your revealed maneuver is the same as the enemy ship, that ship's dice cannot be modified. So another cool control effect here. Not something I would have expected to see all these control abilities come from the Republic.
Right, pretty exciting stuff. You know, we also have, of course, super fitting for the Naboo Starfighters, the Naboo Handmaidens, which are a limited two pilots coming in Initiative 1. And when you set up, you assign the decoy condition to a friendly ship that's not a Naboo Handmaiden.
And the decoy condition allows that ship, while it defends, each friendly Naboo Handmaiden in the attack arc may spend one evade token to change one result into an evade result. Or if that ship that has the decoy condition is an N1 starfighter, it can actually gain those many evade results rather than just converting those results. So some cool stuff, maybe a little limiting just because both of the Naboo Handmaidens are at Initiative 1.
Yeah, but maybe enough that I need to still get three of these things. I don't know. They're pretty cool.
We do get some cool upgrade cards in this expansion. There's a couple key ones we wanted to talk about. Passive sensors is a big one. So this is a new, not faction-restricted sensor upgrade. It comes with one recurring charge, and it reads, action, spend one charge. You can only perform this action in your perform action step. While your charge is inactive, you cannot be coordinated. Before you engage, if your charge is inactive, you may perform a calculate or lock action.
Yeah, so that's the big thing there at the end. You're trading your action during the activation step for when you engage, you can get a calculate or lock action. So usually I think you're taking that lock action. This is a pretty cool sensor to help lower initiative ships get those early target locks to set up those plasma torpedoes. And if nobody's in your lock range or not the target you want, you can just take a calculate.
Yeah, and this one's maybe a little hard to read on first glance, and it seems really targeted at the N1 Starfighter, though I'm sure other people will find effective ways to use this on other ships. It gives, you know, TIE Phantoms the ability to get target locks even if they don't have that lock action, which they don't normally. It's a little weird, though, to comprehend, because you're spending a charge when you do this action to basically get nothing right away, and then before you engage, you get an action. Now, the problem is that since you're getting that action later when you're engaging, if any ships have a higher initiative, that means they're going to engage before you and maybe shoot at you, and you won't have the modification you might have otherwise gotten from that action.
Right, but if your goal there is to target lock, then it's not that much of a loss. Like, you wouldn't have taken that defensive token anyway. And now those higher initiative ships are in your lock range. But I do think you're right. It's well balanced where it gives, you know, it gives those lower initiative ships an edge. But the higher initiative ships do still have a chance to still remove them from the board or push through meaningful critical damage.
We also have a new astromech here, R2A6, which is Republic only and limited to one. After you reveal your dial, you may set your dial to a maneuver of the same bearing of a speed one higher or lower.
Yeah, so these cards are pretty interesting. You know, we've seen effects like this before. Slight modification to your dial. And this one's, you know, not that dramatic of a change. Just changing the speed. You know, you're committed. If you dial a turn, you know, you have to do another turn that same direction. You can just change the speed.
And this is one, I think it'll be cool on the N1, but I really see the big application here on the Jedi Starfighters. Being able to just shift that one speed in the same bearing gives you a lot of options on the Jedi Starfighters. Switching from a 2-turn to a 1-turn is huge. Switching from a 4K to a 5K to avoid blocking could really help out some of those higher initiative Jedi.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really like this on high initiative ships in general, where you can see where your opponent's moved and then respond accordingly. You know, if you're using your favorite Rick Olay, you know, being able to know exactly how fast your opponent goes is going to be important for setting up that ability.
And it gives you just kind of an almost boost level of action efficiency without having to actually perform that action. So if you're in an N1 Starfighter or you're in a Jedi Starfighter, you can set a 4-straight maneuver and you still have that range of options from going down to a 3-speed maneuver or up to a 5-speed maneuver, either to react to whatever your opponent does to get a proper range or to avoid being blocked.
Right. And I do like this a lot in the N1 where, you know, you only get one repositioning action. And so this can be, you know, sort of a second repositioning action that turn.
So there you have it. Lots of cool stuff coming out for the Republic and the Separatist in just a few weeks here. Let us know on social media what your favorite card is that you've seen spoiled so far and why it's Rick Olay. You can do that on our Facebook page under this episode's link or just tweet at us on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.